He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
All right, let's look really quickly here at some questions from you, the listener. We have some from Twitter that we could get to. I'm going to look here at the, we have a couple reviews that I can get to here, five-star reviews that we can get to. All right, so Kush Corleone started us off last Friday with update. Don't panic. This is the longtime listener that had the name popping up. There's a bunch of emojis. This is not a drill. Apple did some type of update that where the option to change it is literally right under the comment section. So we're back. All right. Way to go, Kush. But in all seriousness, considering everything you've already mentioned on why they should upgrade the roster, why are they so scared of using the picks if they can just trade our top talent minus LeBron for obvious reasons? Like, let's say you go all in and it doesn't work. Is the thought process of you'll be able to trade at least 3 to 4 players for draft capital to recoup those future picks and do their idea of a rebuild not even crossing the front office's mind? I think it's frankly excuse making. Like, if you like go all in for one final shot for LeBron, for AD, for now Austin Reeves, who they consider like a cornerstone piece of the team, if you can't go all in to give yourself a shot with those three guys, and then also can't figure out a way to turn through those three guys into picks somewhere down the road to kickstart your rebuild, then what exactly are you good at is my question. And I think like, this is a good question. And like the way that I'll put it, literally texting with Pete, like seconds before we went on the show, and the way that I put it to him, because I've been listening to the LFR pod recently, and he doesn't sound all that thrilled on that pod about the Dorian Finney-Smith edition. And I think he brings up good points on that pod too. And I can't wait to talk to him on this pod about all of this stuff too. But like the way that I put it to him and the way that I kind of feel about the DFS trade is, if it's all that the Lakers wind up doing, it was a half measure. You didn't move your first round draft capital. You didn't improve the team enough to viably compete for a championship now. And you also acquired a player who doesn't help your rebuild on the other side of it because he's 31 years old. So he doesn't make you younger either. If that's all that the Lakers do, I think that would be a substandard trade or transaction window. I think it's more likely than not that they do something else. And if they do something else, it goes from a half measure to an incremental addition, which I'm fine with, right? But if they finish this transaction window and they don't move a first round pick, then it was, you know, a sad hand job of a transaction window. And it's, you know, they need more. Like you need more from this transaction window than that. And I think, you know, now that I don't think they're interested in centers as much, maybe that frees up the ability to go out and upgrade the shooting guard spot that I think they need to, with, you know, say Bruce Brown or I've become really kind of curious about Malcolm Brogdon as your starting shooting guard, with Austin on the ball more. He's a bigger point guard, Brogdon is, so he could play defense there. But yeah, I or maybe you just really believe in Max and he's the shooting guard now and into the future, which would be great. If your starting backcourt for the next few years is only making $20 million, like you should be able to go out and fill out the rest of your roster. I do think the Dorian Finney-Smith trade gives you more leeway to potentially trade for or to potentially trade Rui.
I'm told that there's some pushback on trading Rui, that they see him as a piece of their future. I don't really see that. I don't think he's good enough to be considered part of their future. He's too inconsistent, both like in terms of raw productivity and also like focus on the winning things. But look, he throws up the LA sign. He sells a bunch of jerseys. He helps you with the Japanese market, which is a big deal financially. And he wears number 28 for Gianna and Kobe. And those are the things that resonate with Genie. So, I they need to do more. And if they can't do more out of concern for the future, but they also can't really focus on the future, then like you're not accomplishing anything. All right. The irony of the CBA, according to iCentar.com, new CBA is a blessing in disguise as it limits a team's ability to charge a Lakers tax. Go figure. maybe it also means though that like just some trades are just not happening because of this new CBA, because it's so convoluted. Like every time I feel like I'm getting a grasp for this thing and on my way to making a good, productive Lakers trade or any trade for any team, there's some new CBA rule that pops up and it's like, nope, can't do this. It so-and-so goes over whatever apron. I hate this new CBA. The league's executives hate the new CBA. The players hate the new CBA. The only people who like the new CBA are the owners, because they were able to implement a hard cap that they've been trying to implement for decades. They were able to do it with this thing. And, you know, the players union just absolutely dropped the ball.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire. Plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right. Let's go with... I asked for questions. And I'm looking for... Here we go. All right. We have a few. My buddy, the Kobe Beef, how many Mavs fans have sent you trade machine proposals trying to get Dorian Finney-Smith back to Dallas? I bet that starts next year. So Hamas Tariq writes, do you believe the Lakers are looking to upgrade the positions of Max and Rui if they're truly trying to contend this year? And how much does targeting a low salary big help them make other moves, whether that be Bruce Brown, Kuz, etc.? Yeah, like if they trade for a big, like I actually think the chances of trading for Jonas are slightly diminished, because he makes just enough to where you have to combine two veteran minimum salaries to go out, unless like you send out Gabe. But if you send out Gabe, like they really missed Gabe in the last game, both from a point of attack defense perspective because of the two guards that Cleveland has, and also from a second unit creation standpoint, which isn't even what he's particularly good at. But if you send out Gabe for a big, now like you are really hurting for guard minutes. Now I tweeted this out the other day. I'm recording this on January 2nd. You could theoretically trade or make an uneven trade and open up a roster spot and then go out and get like Dennis Smith Jr. or Markelle Fultz or whomever, Lonnie Walker. Like you could go out and do that. You could, like the Lakers, and I think they should do this, because I'm not sure we're going to see Christian Wood this year, just based on some of the stuff that you hear. You could just waive Christian Wood at this point. They are far enough under the second apron to where they can give out 10-day contracts. Again, starting on January 5th, which is Sunday, they could start giving out 10-day contracts to guys to bring them in and give them a look at this stuff. And, you know, Christian isn't really doing anything for you and doesn't appear to be likely to do much for you. So like, I wouldn't hate the idea of just like waving him and wishing him well as he continues to try to fight his way out of the NBA. But yeah, the idea of like upgrading from Max or Rui, upgrading from Rui is going to be difficult because the Lakers no longer have expiring, like a big expiring contract. Upgrading from Max is a little easier, but you're going to still run into the same issues because like Bruce Brown makes $23 million this year and Malcolm Brogdon makes $22.5 million this year. There just aren't very many shooting guards who would be a clear upgrade over Max, given the way he's playing right now and especially defending right now. There aren't very many shooting guards who are going to be clear upgrades over Max who are making like their contract is in the teens this year. That would be kind of what you'd be looking for. Just given the contracts that the Lakers have to work with. Another problem that you're having, right, is that like there's real concern growing internally and throughout the league that Vanderbilt is just not going to be able to play this year. And he has a contract extension that extends, you know, into next year, maybe even beyond. And it's like, why would anybody trade for this guy if there's concern that the guy can might not be able to play? I think one thing that the Lakers are going to monitor very, very closely is going to be the Lonzo Ball situation. He would operate as like your shooting guard upgrade potentially. And he can also handle the ball with second units too. So if he's able to like stay healthy, and he does continue to look better and better and better as the year goes on, I do think he's going to like, they're going to think long and hard about Lonzo. But again, he's making like 20-ish million bucks a year. And that is a tricky number to get to without including like Rui or including Vando, which the Bulls aren't really interested in Jared Vanderbilt because nobody is interested in Jared Vanderbilt. You could trade Gabe. And since you're getting a guard back, you could trade, but they aren't really interested in Gabe's contract because it extends into next year too. We'll see what the Lakers were able to do here, but I do think, you know, that central point of needing to upgrade from Max and or Rui in the starting group and finishing groups is an important one. Let's see. I'm going to look at the Discord really quick. And this is a long question here. I'm going to answer this one in Discord because it's a longer question. I want to really quickly just touch on something that I've noticed as Russell Westbrook has played relatively well in Denver, and as there's already highlights going around of D'Lo, the way that D'Lo looks in Brooklyn, though they just lost to the Toronto Raptors, who were actively trying to lose. We only see this for some stupid reason in basketball and in NBA discourse, where if somebody is doing something well, we can't just say, well, it's a cool story. This person's doing something well. We have to blame somebody for somebody doing something well. And I'm seeing that now with like Russell Westbrook and the Lakers, where like Russ looks good. Has been a good story, positive story there in Denver. And that somehow now has to reflect poorly on the Lakers. Now, there's the infamous Dave McMenamin segment, right, where he said, according to a source, They got rid of the vampire who was sucking the lifeblood out of the locker room. Phrasing isn't obviously ideal there, but we can admit that that wasn't going well. And that doesn't mean that, like, Russ was never going to figure it out ever. Like, watch him play for the Nuggets. Just watch him. The squirrel moments on defense are lessened. He's been a positive defensive player for the Denver Nuggets this year. I think it's a credit to Jokic for his ability to play on or off of the ball. I wished back then, and having seen it now with Austin, I wish we would have gotten more two-man game between LeBron and Russ. But at that point in their careers, neither of those guys wanted to set screens. Russ is a lot more open to doing all of the things that he needed to do to be a consistently winning player. And I think rather than like shit on his time with the Lakers or shit on the Lakers, we should just be able to say, like, yeah, it's cool that this guy is finally open to the little things on a basketball court that make him a more consistently positive impact player. It's also January 2nd, and it's a long season, and they're probably going to see some regression at some point, seeing as they aren't winning at the high clip that they need to continue to reward those little things, that consistency with the little things. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, and we're going to see it. Like, just watch. D'Angelo Russell's counting stats are going to go way up. And his vibes on the Brooklyn Nets are going to be a lot better because he's playing a role that he's more interested in than he was playing with the Lakers. And it's going to happen all over again where it's like, gosh, man, the Lakers, they just seem like a soul-sucking experience for these players. And it's like, I guess if you want to frame it that way, Lakers fans have high expectations of players. And yeah, like when you're reluctant to do the things that you are required to do to win basketball games, if you don't do those things, Lakers fans can see it. Or the results will indicate that not enough players are doing everything that needs to be done to win. And it's like Russell Westbrook, I don't know why we're still doing this. Russell Westbrook at $4 million a year is good value. Russell Westbrook at $47 million a year, and the limits that places on the rest of your roster, is not very good value. And somehow, like, we ignore all of this context because it allows people who don't like the Lakers to shit on the Lakers. And it also allows Lakers fans the bugaboo. Like, there was a lot wrong during the Russell Westbrook era. I thought LeBron was a poor leader during that stretch. He was very passive aggressive. He needed to be aggressive aggressive. I thought Rob Pelinka did a really poor job of making up for Russell's deficiencies elsewhere on the roster. But instead, he just kind of like went into his shell and assumed the fetal position and worked way harder to leak who was actually responsible for that not going well than he ever did to fix anything. I thought Frank Vogel did a really poor job of coaching that situation. The best coaches coach the teams that's actually in front of them, and limited coaches refuse to do that and coach their teams based on like what it would look like if they had a roster that better fit their approach to the sport. Ran into the same thing with Darvin Ham too. Like, and both of those guys were Rob Pelinka hires. Like, if you actually want to go back and assign blame for the Russell Westbrook experience going as poorly as it did, it's Rob. That's it. Like, you could trace every single thing that went wrong there back to Rob. And then you could extend that lineup to Genie, right? For putting all those people in place. In terms of like the basketball product, yeah, Russ played a big role in the Lakers being a terrible team to watch during that run. Like, of course he played a role in that. They all did. And like, it's cool that he's figuring this out. It's fun to watch him there in Denver. Just like, I was really happy to see D'Lo look a lot more joyful on the basketball court the other day, playing a role that he seems a lot more interested in. Look, winning isn't for everybody. There are plenty of players who make a whole bunch of money in the NBA who never win anything. And it's like, if winning isn't necessarily always the highest priority, as it might not be for D'Angelo Russell, then like, he can still maximize his time in the NBA. It just won't feature too much winning deep into the playoffs. For Russell Westbrook, like, he now is prioritizing winning. He is doing those things that it takes to win. And as such, if the Nuggets make the right kind of moves, if they finally move off of like the young core that they have that isn't particularly good, and they go out and get more guys who can like help them win now, then maybe Russ will be rewarded for doing the winning things that he's been doing with more winning. And now I'm rooting for it not to happen, because I don't want another good team in the Western Conference as the Lakers try to figure out their own path to winning more consistently. But yeah, I don't know. This is a lot of ranting. It's a lot of raving, but I would just like for like, just at one point, some point, when it comes to NBA discourse, I would just like to be able to just say, hey, wow, somebody's playing well. And then that'd be it. It's boring, you know, I guess. And it doesn't feature somebody screaming into a microphone about who is to blame for somebody playing well. But like, we should just be able to say, oh, wow, look at that. That's cool. Look at that player playing well. Look at that team playing well. That's awesome. That's great. And then that'd be it. That'd be cool. I'm saying that with a smile on my face. It's nice to say nice things about people. But, you know, here we are. All right. That is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge Podcast. We'll be right back here in the lounge later tonight to recap the game between the Lakers and the Portland Trailblazers. And that will be with me and Raj. And then I'll have a lowdown for you tomorrow as well, talking about that Portland Trailblazer game. I expect it to go a lot better than the Cleveland one did. So until then, and until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin, saying have a great rest of your day, make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you guys in a few hours.
Bye, everyone.